Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and see if you can guess who my next guest is. Now, you have to concentrate. You have to think really hard. No, you're not. You're not concentrating. Think. Okay, I'm going to... Do you see a letter? Do you see the letter K in front of your... No, not if you're doing Special K. I'm saying think of the letter K in front of your brains, and you know, push it out. Push it out in your head and think, qua... Quack, quack, you got it. That's right. The amazing Queskin is our guest in the neighborhood tonight. Welcome to the neighborhood, amazing Queskin. How you doing?
Dave, I got to tell you, that was a delightful introduction. I've had all kinds of introductions through the years from those out of left field, but I kept getting my name as an impression. I'm all good to talk to you. Can I ask you, where's your home base? Where are you speaking to me from?
This is a Long Island radio station. It's the signal's out of Freeport. It's WGBB, although our offices and studio are in Babylon. But here's the question that I'm sure you get 4 billion zillion times. Wouldn't you know that? Like, couldn't you just press something on your head and go, oh, he's coming out of Babylon. He's Jewish. He's 43. What?
I'm walking down the street in London, and someone shouts across the street, Kreskin, what's my wife's name? Tell me my wife's name. And then on and on, you know, I get a kick out of it. One of the soap operas, someone in the afternoon, I don't watch the soaps, but it's been on for years. I don't know, a gal was saying to the doctor, how come you didn't know this was what was wrong with me? And he says, who do you think I am, the amazing Kreskin? Well, the relief, Dave, is so far I have not been referred to as a molester, terrorist,
well,
or wife beater, but I get a kick out of my name come, and it comes up an awful lot in sports commentaries and sports stories. So, you know, I my whole work deals with the mind, but I don't know if I would have ever dreamt 40, 50 years ago that my name would be used in such a way. Now I met some people because of some negotiations from Korea, and they say, do you know the Korean people have a term that uses your name, and they were trying to explain it to me. It sounded fairly positive, Dave. I'm afraid to try to interpret it any further. That scares me.
Well, I guess they use it interchangeably with psychic in a Korean sort of way.
I'll tell you what happened. Years ago, I had most people listening in probably don't know who Steve Allen was, but there was a very fine broadcaster in the 50s and 60s.
It would be very sad if people listening to my program did not know who Steve Allen was.
Well, he was a brilliant wit. He was a brilliant, brilliant man. And I remember watching him as a kid, and then he heard about me. And in the 60s, and I was just going to college, but I was performing everywhere. He flew me into L.A., and he had just left the Tonight Show, and he was doing a nighttime show in L.A. And he said, well, everybody's interested in EST and telepathy. It was very nice. He said, this young man has some kind of unusual gift. Well, let's welcome Kreskin. And Dave, I walked out.
Yeah.
In those days, and the shows were live, but in those days, the lights were very hot, very, very bright in television. And there was no rehearsal because I refused to rehearse what I was going to do. I would just describe what I was going to try to do with the audience. I walk out on camera. The lights are blaring in my eyes. I go over to shake hands with Steve Allen, and I had not met him up to now, and he's standing on a dais, just like tonight on Leno and Letterman, their desk is raised, and don't you know, as I walk over, Dave, I trip over the desk, I fall flat on my face, my first break in national
television.
So somebody
was
watching that night, and 6 or 8 weeks later, Johnny Carson created Karnak, who fell over the desk. That was me.
Well, also, I mean, I think he took Karnak from Steve Allen, yeah.
Swami.
Yeah.
Swami also had a tongue-in-cheek quality to it, because in the last year, Johnny was on, I did 88 shows with him, and the last year he was on, I said, you know, Johnny, you never let me forget my first break on TV. He says, oh, the mighty Karnak. But it's funny how, that's lingered with me. I never wanted the term amazing. I never used it, but Carson used to say to Ed McMahon, well, the last time Kreskin was on, he was 92% amazing, and Ed McMahon would say, no, he was 96% amazing, and he's going to be on. And finally, people started saying around the country, amazing, and I'm thinking, what are you saying that for? So it's funny how a nickname becomes part of my life.
Well, I guess the percentage rate, if you are getting 80 to 90 plus percent ratings, that is pretty amazing for... Now, I have to be right up front and tell you that I don't per se believe in this kind of thing. I'm accepting of it as a, I hate to say a trick, but more of an entertainment value kind of artistry. And that's how I'd like to put it.
I appreciate that. You know, I've never made any claims of any special psychic powers or what have you, but at the same time, all my life I have, I've never made any claims, although I happen to personally believe that I do have a telepathic ability, and I don't think it's any particularly supernatural. This has been all my life. But whether you do or not, I always remind, and I love skeptics in an audience because, mm-hmm. You know, last year, let's see, just as of 4 months ago, I've now flown 3 million miles, a little over 3 million. And the pilots, when I get on the plane, they say, oh, how many miles is it now, Crescent? Because I've flown more than most commercial pilots in the United States today. And anybody wants, by the way, if anybody wants to get any more information about my travels and travails, they can always go to my webpage, you know, amazingcrescent.com. I offer $50,000, you know, to anybody who can prove I employ paid assistants or Confederates in any phase of my program. And today, Roger Ailes, who's the head of Fox News, but I've known him for 40 years because he was a producer years ago of the Mike Douglas Show, and that was a daily staple. And I did 118 shows with Mike, and he said to me the other day, I was at his home a few months ago. He said, you don't get as many people that are skeptical of what you do, do you, Crescent? And, you know, when you're traveling, Dave, when you're traveling all the time, you don't stop, sometimes you don't stop to think and what's going on passing through your life. I said, Roger, I don't hear as much skepticism anymore. He says, don't you realize why? I said, what are you talking about? He says, my God, you've done a few thousand television shows. People have seen you for 40 years. Most people realize today, nobody keeps any secrets. Sooner or later, someone's going to blow the whistle, you know, because they do it with presidents. I never thought of that.
Well, also, I mean, every other time that I turn on someone like Montel, there's, what's her name? Not Joy.
Who talks to the dead, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, no thank you. Maybe at one time she had a dream and it happened once and she's built a career on it. I don't buy it. It bothers me if she's trying to do things with people, with relatives who are really grieving, and et cetera. I mean, I have a real difficulty with that kind of thing.
I have a tremendous difficulty regarding Sylvia Brown, and I never said anything about it until the story broke about they played the tape of it, how a year or so ago, a young man who had disappeared, the parents were on the show, and she explained that the kid is dead, and she had talked to him and so forth. And as some of the listeners know, I'm not going to go into details, it turns out the kid had been kidnapped, and this man had him incarcerated, I don't know, God, 9 months or what have you. And then to go back to her, when the press played this and said, you told his family she was dead, her remark was, well, I'm not 100% successful. Well, damn it, if you're not 100% successful, it is totally irresponsible to even suggest to someone that someone is dead when you don't know for sure.
I'm in complete agreement with you. I mean, it astonishes me that she's still on television.
Well, I don't know. I think it's the irresponsibility of a company to perpetuate something like that. Because, listen, I believe in the hereafter. My religion is based on it. But the thing that bothers me, and I do believe that there are some individuals who seriously, sincerely believe that they are somehow talking to the spirit world. I've never seen evidence of it. But the one thing... And I respect that, but anyone responsible would never pull such an irresponsible move as something like that. But the people who make this for a living, I have one slight problem. Yes, all right.
Sounds like you have a lot of problems with those folks.
Let me accept the fact that you believe you are speaking to the dead. Do you realize there are scores and scores, hundreds of thousands of people whose loved ones have been murdered? Why not contact them and ask them who did the murder, or contact the dead spirit and say, what's the evidence we can look for? Or, Grandma, you died, but you never told us where you put some valuable papers. No one ever asked them just some important questions.
I know. I know.
Other than that, I have no problem.
Well, because it's, I mean, I will use the word fraud if you do not want to use that particular word. But I'm sure you would bristle when folks have perhaps used that word on you, although, as you said right off the bat, you said, hey, I don't claim to have psychic powers.
I do what I do,
you know?
I don't talk to the dead because Houdini never answered the damn phone. But I do believe under certain conditions it's possible to perceive a person's thoughts, and they have to concentrate, cooperate. And it's been my showcase through my career, you know, traveling last year around the world. I did, can you imagine this, Dave, 341 appearances. I have to tell you.
In 365 days.
Yes, don't tell me that. Bob Hope used to say to me, he used to say to me, Kreskin, there's no world war right now. Where the hell have you been the past 2 weeks, you know, and so forth? And of course, the idea, the fact of the matter is that we are gypsies. But I just came, I got to tell you, because I'm sure the listeners realize this from reading the papers and knowing what's going on. It is no great, wonderful experience to fly frequently these days.
Oh, well, no.
And it's not danger. My God, I think it's the safest time to fly. It is the, I don't know what in the world has happened to this grand industry called the airline industry. The average amount of luggage lost, and I said this many times on network shows, lost every day in this country is approximately 10,000 pieces of luggage. When you think of that many lives fouled up, it's, and God forbid, folks, if you're traveling, you're going to connect, you better give yourself more than an hour to connect, because there's a good chance your luggage will never make it. So it, and then if your luggage is lost, and I'm sorry if the airline industry is upset with me because I've championed them for years, but if your luggage is lost, it gets pretty tiring. The first call you make talking day after day to someone who lives in India, because the service is now outsourced.
Of course. Well, that's with computers, that's with everything. I mean, I do have a, there's a theater critics group that I belong to, and we travel once a year to some city in America, and we see the theater there for a week.
You mean you go, like you attend the theater, or you see the makeup of the theater?
Well, both. We tour the theater, and then we attend the performances.
That is the neatest thing.
It's a wonderful thing. We go out to, yeah, I mean, it's this group of critics, theater
like
critics
about,
from all
Dave,
over.
About how many of you go?
Depending on the city, anywhere from 80 of us to 150 plus our spouses.
I think that is the neatest thing.
But the thing is, one of our fellows is he's a wonderful fellow, a guy named Larry. He's a critic in Chicago, mm-hmm. And invariably every year we go, something terrible happens to him at the airport. He loses his luggage every time. It always, you know, he's always there in the city for 3 days, and he has to go buying underwear and everything because his suitcase doesn't get there until 3 days later. And it's just, we always wonder when we finally see him every year, okay, Larry, what happened? What went wrong this time?
And he usually has a story to tell, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's the beautiful thing about it.
You know,
or there's the old Henny Youngman.
Yeah.
Joke that I just heard.
Yeah.
He was calling the airlines and he said, do me a favor, can you send 3 pieces of luggage, one to South Carolina, one to Detroit, and one to San Diego? And they said, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that. And he said, why, you did it last week. So anyway.
I knew him, and he used to kid me. He said, no. He said, and bless his soul, because I just love the man, but sometimes I'd be at this special event, I'd be invited to the Friars, and he'd say, no. He says, not on stage, because when I do my live concerts, performances, I'm on stage for 2.5 hours, 2 hours and 35 minutes. He says, nobody's on that. I said, yes, I am, Teddy.
Wow.
Yes, I am. But on the other side of the coin, a lot of the performances are corporate. I was for a company called Island Restaurants in Palm Springs
uh-huh.
2 days ago. And I want to tell you something. I don't know if this is warm in where you are now in Long Island.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day, yeah.
But it's warmer here than it was in... It's just like... if there's no global warming, then something's going on, because it's awfully warm for the latter part of October.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it's been. I'm not complaining. And I'm sure you know how winter is. It can be warm, 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 and then bam, right in the middle of November, suddenly it's down to 20 degrees at night, and we've forgotten how warm it was for a month and a half. I mean, that's weather also. Stuff happens.
Hi, this is Kreskin. Of course, you know me as the amazing Kreskin. And if you are reading my thoughts, you know you're listening to Dave Has Gone By on WGBB.
I'm still grieving this baseball season as a Met fan.
Oh, my God. You really, you had a tough day a few days ago when that last game was played.
Oh, you know what? I had given up on them a week earlier because I knew even if they were going to squeak out at the end, they didn't deserve it because they really collapsed. But I had read in the research for this interview that you at one point had, there was a different Mets team that was undergoing some pretty bad, actually it was this year, back when the Mets had their June swoon, wasn't it? And you made an offer.
Yes, I did. I sit here. Well, I gotta tell you something. You know, there's a team now. Again, please, the folks who've seen me on television know that I have no special powers. I'm not. Otherwise, I would try to straighten out some of the war that's going on. But there is a basketball team called the Raptors. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
With the Raptors, you know.
Are they Colorado? I'm not sure where they are.
They're out of Canada.
Okay,
and I have to tell you the story because you'll get a kick out of this. I toured Canada a great deal and just covered 8,000 miles a couple of months ago. And they were having a terrible losing streak. And the sports writers were calling me saying, Creston, you have to say something sarcastic. What do you see in their future? And I said, well, I don't want to be negative. Well, we had a lot of fun with it. But finally, they had lost. It was either 12 or 13 games. Just a couple of years ago. And I said, you know what? I said, get me a station out of Toronto. So a station came through. I said, I can't be there in person. I'm in Calgary or some other part of Canada. But can you have me on the tomorrow and we'll talk about it. So I said, listen, all you folks listening in, tomorrow in the morning, 8:15 or so forth, wherever you are, we're going to do a mass positive thought concentration and try to give them winning energy to break this damn losing streak, which I think was in 13 games. It was very negative 13 games.
Yeah.
So anyway, guess what? You'll get a kick. The next day, I go on the air. I'm live, but I'm in another part of Canada. I'm saying to all the listeners, okay, where you are, just stop what you're doing. If you're by a window, stand by the open window. If you're in a car, pull over to the side. Well, I have to tell you, we got in trouble, not any ramifications legally, but with the police in the area because they didn't know what in the world was going on. Here in Toronto, cars were parking four cars deep. There were traffic, and the police didn't know what was going on. Why were these cars all suddenly stopping? I said, we only need 1 minute, 1.5 minutes. And we thought, okay, shout in your mind. You've got to win. You're going to break this. You're going to break this. The beauty of it is that night they won. So they won. And I got to tell you, I'm touring. I come back to New Jersey, where my home base is, and there's the Meadowland here. And I get this invitation. Please come to the game. You know, we'd like to have you there as our guest. But I'll tell you, I thought it was a great lark that had happened of all times on a situation like that. But I'll tell you, the Mets could have used something in those lines. Things were not going well with them. It was a very bad. It was over a few weeks, wasn't it? Bad playing.
Well, they were a streaky team. There was this point when, first of all, they had that June swoon,
and there was
a story about you were trying to help them then, quote unquote. And then, in the last month or so, they hit the Phillies, and they lost four very important games in a row. And then they came back.
Four major games, my people were telling me, yes.
And then they came back and they started building up their lead again, and everything was okay. And then it looked like, okay, no problem, they're going to do it.
They had a good chance.
And then just slid into oblivion.
That last week or 10 days, that was really true. I could tell you there, you're going to laugh because as much as I've been involved with sports figures and so forth, I'm not too sophisticated. You know what March Madness is?
I don't follow college basketball.
It's a basketball, and it's like starts with either 62 or I don't know how many teams. But as they play, of course, each set of games, it goes down one half and one half. So ESPN Sports comes to me and said, Creston, you a couple of years ago predicted on New Year's Day that the Yankees 9 months from now would be in the World Series, and it would go seven games, and the last game they would lose. And I remember Bob Costas saying to me, he's saying it jokingly on the air, why didn't you tell us this earlier so we didn't have to wait all this time? But anyway, so the bottom line, Dave, is I decided, and I've been asked to do this again, but insanity only runs temporarily in my life. I decided, well, I'm not a fortune teller, but I do analyze trends. the way I've made predictions is different than my thought reading. I look at sequence, because as has been said by many people through history, you know, you don't learn from history, you're going to repeat it again. So I studied something I knew nothing about, the basketball, and my prediction was that the Connecticut team, that they would win. But I did a stupid thing, and I said something. I thought, what's the matter with me? Why would I stick my neck out? I said they would win, but in the last game played, the last team to lose, or lose to them, would be Georgia Tech. But this was weeks and weeks before. And I was a nervous wreck as the games are played, because, first of all, I'm not interested, nor am I sophisticated. I'm thinking, what's going on? People are reporting to me, guess what, the Connecticut team won, and the last team that they lost, was Georgia Tech. I hit the nail on the head. So a few years ago, a couple of years ago in Canada, there was a major election, and unlike the interminable period that we have here in the United States, in Canada you run for election, you campaign for a month. Is that not a breath of fresh air, Dave, compared to this country?
Now it's a year and a half in this
country. Yeah, a year and a half. You said it all. England, it's only a month. This is crazy. I mean, we're bored already, bored to tears. So I do a tremendous amount of concerts, private companies, and public shows in Canada. And they said, and Mike Duffy, who has a show similar to Meet the Press in the States, you know, and he said, would you come on the air? We'd like you to think about, I don't know, think about the election. He said, well, you know, once you think about it, come on. So I said, listen, this is one time. I'm not going to make it public because, Dave, you announce the election, you're going to lose half your audience. You're now alienated. I said, listen, put it in a safe. Put this envelope in the safe. And they had it in the safe every day for 20-some days. They said, this is the Kreskin safe and what have you. They flew me back the night of the election, and I'm a wreck watching. They had me the night. You can imagine the wreck I am. I'm going to fall on my face, what have you. Well, I had said that the Liberal Party would be reinstated to office, but I said that if he did win, which I thought he would not carry the plurality he needs to function. I think I said he would only carry something like 135 seats, which is not a lot of seats. Well, guess what? I'm on the Today Show in Canada the next day.
Yeah.
He had won, carried exactly 135 seats. And I said something off the top of my head, and this has been played hundreds of times on news shows after that in Canada. I said, you know, if this party has won, but if they're going to survive, I said, it's going to be a pretty close call, because if there's any problem, this government could collapse in. And I named a number of weeks. It was either 22 or what have you. But I named a specific number of weeks. And we went off the air, and I thought, this is the most stupid thing I could have done, because here I hit it. It was successful. Why bury myself by sticking my neck out? Well, Dave, I'm touring, and I come home to my house here where you're speaking to me here in New Jersey one night, and the phone, the light's blinking. And I pick up, and it's all reported from Canada. About a year ago, in November, the Canadian government had one of the worst collapses in recorded history. The entire government collapsed because of three parties going against the Liberal Party. And I was only off by, I think, 5 days. And you know, you asked me, and they asked me, of course, because they were playing back what I had predicted.
Yeah, sure.
What made me say it? And, Dave, I say this with honesty. First of all, how could I even give an answer? Something I must have picked up something in studying the whole turmoil of events, but things like that sometimes shake me up, but it's part of my career.
It's like, do you have this moment of clarity that comes? You study, you look at the figures, almost like a bookie or a really savvy Wall Street person, and then you just sort of zone into something and boom, it appears in your head.
You know,
and again, it's not necessarily psychic or kind of God.
No, it is.
God.
It can't be psychic, because there's no crystal ball to look in. And I'm not reading anybody's thoughts, because if I'm reading somebody's thoughts, then they're the ones that know what's going on. You said it all. A lot of corporate groups have asked me after the show to do a question and answer. And I point out, and I think you, Dave, from your work, understand this, that most... most of the problems we have, first of all, most of the problems we have in life, we create ourselves.
Okay.
And if we don't want to face that fact, then we're not facing the fact that, hell, if it's our fault, we got the chance of remedying our lives. But if any clinical psychologist, and my background is in psychology and studying at Seton Hall University and so on, know that most of the problems people have, the answers are within them, and they're not facing up to them. If that's the case, then let's learn from someone like, well, many people like Thomas Edison, who would lie down on a bench not many miles from where I'm living here in his laboratory because he studied all the problems of a project and then slept on it. Or JFK would read trash magazines after he had seen all his advisors giving them all the percentage advices, and it would get his mind off of it, and then intuitively he would come up with an answer. And Einstein, who was only an hour here in Princeton, would get in a rowboat and let the boat drift on the lake because he knew that he had amassed enough information, but now he could be jammed by the clutter. You know what I'm saying, Dave?
Oh, yeah. And also, maybe something about New Jersey.
No, Dave, because we have a slight problem here. When McGreevy stepped down a couple of years ago, made that famous press conference, and he was gay and so forth, I had to have a little bit of fun. I had appeared at a concert some months before, and McGreevy was there to introduce and what have you, and he walked into my dress room, and Governor McGreevy said, "Kreskin, maybe I shouldn't be here. You read my thoughts, we're in trouble." Well, I have a feeling it's a good thing. I should have read his thoughts, because the corruption had nothing to do with his being gay. That was
right.
A smokescreen. This has become the most, I think, over other states. We deserve credit. I love New Jersey, but it's the most corrupt state. And I offered, when McGreevy stepped down, I offered my services. I said, "I'd like to be hired by the New Jersey government. I want to be paid $1 a year to make it legitimate. I'll sit in on conferences, negotiations, and then when it's all over, sit with the powers that be and tell them what these people really had in mind." And Dave, can I tell you, some of the newspapers, including the Asbury Park Press, had serious editorials. They said, "Hell, you've tried everything else. Why not use Kreskin?" I think I'm going to offer this again, Dave.
Why not, man? I mean,
what do you got to
lose? Absolutely.
This is Kreskin. And I don't have to read your thoughts to know that you're listening to Dave's Gone By. WGBB, that's WGBB, and you'll find a strong urge to continue to listen. Dave, I want to mention real quick, you told me last night you'd spoken to Marilyn
May. Marilyn May, yes, the singer.
I saw her a month ago at the Metropolitan Room in here in New York, and then went on a broadcast with her. This woman has, how anybody in her 80s has the energy. She has more dynamics. I would like to let a lot of young people who've won prizes on TV shows for their town sit in an audience and know what it means to communicate with an audience. She is so, I'm sure the interview went well.
Yes, yeah, she was great. She was lovely.
She's going to do, they told me that she's going to do a show, I guess,
at the Metropolitan Room in November. And
with all the Carson things that she did, you know, the show, the story she did. So, you know, maybe, Dave, when it gets close to that time, you and I can talk, and I'll tell you some of the wild stories in my life, because doing 88 shows with Carson, I got to know him better than most people ever would dream of, you know?
Wow. Well, can you? We have time, I think, for one Carson story with Kreskin. So,
let me tell you how this man, a lot of people don't know the behind the scenes, because Johnny was a very private man, and if he went to a private party, he'd be sitting in the corner fumbling with something in his hands. Now, this is the man who could be in front of an audience of 10,000.
Right.
And one day I'm coming on the show, and I never prearrange anything. He was adamant in saying that. He said, "I want to tell you something. This man just came to the show tonight. He flew in from wherever I was in the country. And I will not mention them because they're known, and one is a comedian. I won't say who the other person is. But before I was going on, they were on the air with Johnny, and I will tell you that either they were stoned or they were drunk, because they were just out of it. And Carson handled the interview with them brilliantly. He answered rhetorical questions that you almost he could answer, because, Dave, all I can tell you is, it was a disgrace they ever went on the air. But he handled it brilliantly, and I don't think most viewers knew that these people were not consciously critical at that moment.
Right.
Now, Tito Sali comes over to me and says, Kreskin, you're going on. Is everything okay? I said, no.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, I can't do anything with them. First of all, they're not going to concentrate. How am I going to read their thoughts? You know, and Peter didn't get upset and all this because he knew me well enough. He said, what can we do? I said, listen, you get a deck of cards. Just get a deck of cards. And now we're the show's a commercial break. They shout across to Jack Pierce, who is at like 30 feet away from me or 25 feet. He opens a closet there, and as John is introducing me, he throws this deck across the backstage, and I, thank God, I caught it, and I drop it in my left jacket pocket as someone parts the curtain, and I'm now walking the 12 steps from the opening of the curtain to where Johnny is. I just took my hand out of my pocket, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? What will I do? What will I do? And I walk up, and I sit down. Now I sit next to Johnny with these two damn drunken characters next to me. Now, there's a glass of water on the table in front of me. There's a pad.
Mm-hmm.
A pencil, what have you. And I'm going to write something. And I'm talking to Johnny, and I talk to him. The one, quote, comedian, close quote, next to me, shakes and knocks the entire table, and the glass of water falls.
From
the playing cards, to the pad, to everything. Now, this is just destroying everything. And the audience does not laugh.
They
groan. Johnny turns to him, and looks at him and says, I see you're doing your best material.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, the guy was never on the air ever again. And now Johnny looks at me. Johnny's left side of his face is towards the audience. My right side is facing the cameras, and we're looking. Johnny says, you know, Kreskin, I just about had it with you. How many times you've been on now? I said, 48, 50 times. He says, yeah. Every time you're on, you're always reading the thoughts of our guests. You're always working with the audience. You never do anything with me. Why don't you work just with me tonight? He winks.
Smart.
Save me. Now, that's a professional.
That was, yeah, wow. That's saving the moment.
I have, you know, Dave, I could talk to you for hours.
I could listen to you for hours. Our audience could. Unfortunately, we don't have hours. In fact, we don't really have any more time, but you are invited, certainly, to be back in the neighborhood again, because you, I'll tell you one, whether it's a trick or a psychic thing, you make time fly.
Well,
that's a pretty darn good thing you do.
Well,
I'll say that.
Thanks, Dave, and and you know, again, if anyone would like to further follow my activities, you know, go to AmazingKreskin.com. But you know, Dave, we'll talk before, maybe, if there's a chance, before Marilyn gets to the Metropolitan. I guess it's around the 7th or 8th. I'm not sure. I don't remember what time she's. But I'm not going to say, you know, Dave, I won't say goodbye to you. Let's just say to be continued, and I'll talk to you soon again.
Lovely. Thank you, Kreskin.